This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
A12 on the West Coast, where two of us are, myself and Jeff Kenny. Jeff, what's going on? How are you?
Good, Mac. Going.
All right. Hold on. We got to get Tim Lynch in here.
Right.
Doc Lynch, what's going on?
And not much, Mac. How are you?
Listen to that, man, with the new microphone and everything. Sound like a big boy.
He does.
Hey,
Good job, Tim.
I'm still pleased with myself for figuring that stupid thing out.
Hey, it's a lot, man. It's a lot. There's a lot of switches, and then you add another component in there. You got to understand the game, and then you got to understand base and treble.
It was the browser. I just had to switch browsers. That's all it was.
Oh, really? That much?
Yeah, as embarrassing as it was. But I still feel proud that I figured it out for some stupid reason.
Well, it's a lot. It's a lot. You know what? Different browsers do different things. People don't know that. I can't get to this website. Have you tried a different browser? What? No. All right. I want to start with every week I ask you guys to bring one thing, and then what I want to talk about tends to dominate the hour, which is how it should be. But
yeah.
I just because it's leap year, it's really not. But because I'll say it is, we'll turn the world upside down, and we'll talk about. We'll start with something you want to talk about. So, Doc, from the furthest, are you the furthest south part of the United States?
Just about, yeah.
Hmm.
No, I think Florida's further south than we are technically.
Right.
Yeah, Florida. Yeah. Florida's further south.
Don't let your wall map in elementary school lead you to that conclusion, because sometimes
depends which way the Earth is tilted. I can't remember. So
exactly. Do you know? Okay. Question: true or false? Is there any part of Florida that is in the central time zone?
No.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Kenny, Pensacola is.
And Kenny's a smart guy too.
Yeah. Well, I guess not. I'm not.
Evidently not. You're not. Yeah. Yeah. The western edge of Florida is, I want to say, 250 miles from New Orleans.
Right.
Yeah. How crazy is that? And it's in the central time zone. And I know this because I was getting Gary Kling, who was the air officer of the 1st Marine Division. I was trying to get him to come on, and we were negotiating over the time. And so I said, well, this time. And he said, no, this time. And I said, what do you mean? He said, Mac, we're only 2 hours ahead of you. I said, well, where are you? He said, I'm in Florida. And I said, well, no shit. So Florida's more than Florida's three. He said, no, the western part of Florida is two. I said, are you shitting me? And the answer to that is no. He wasn't shitting me. So I look on a map, and the western edge of Florida is equal to, right, kind of north-south on the same line as Chicago is.
Right.
So you learn something new every day. Yeah, it's not 200. It might be 200 miles from I'd say about between 200 and 250 between those two points. So there you go. You learn something new every day, right?
Yeah.
So there you have it. But let's get to the bottom of who's further south. Now, looking at my map here, I'm looking at McAllen, Texas, and I'm looking at Florida. And I'll tell you what, if it wasn't for the Keys, it'd be a wash. But because we have to include the Florida Keys in Florida, which I think is kind of bullshit, but we got to own them so that the Russians don't occupy them and set up some missiles.
Ernest Hemingway heard you say that, he'd punch you in the nose. Down there in Key West.
he wouldn't be able to. He'd have to stand up to throw the punch.
Well, right. He'd be too drunk. But it was early enough, like now, he might still be able to, muster up the
no, he's still asleep.
Proper coordination, you know.
He would be asleep. So it would be a short window that Ernie would have to get me. And he would probably have to be upright. But you know what? As he drinks his first cup of coffee and eats like a bagel or something, he may. You're right. He may have a shot to do that. All right, so who wants to go first? Who's got a more compelling topic?
Well, allow me. Allow me, because I wanted to talk about, because this is, I know that you had prepped us with a few things that you wanted to chat about, the not allowing transitioning or transvestites or whatever in the military be one of them. And my topic is toxic.
Are we talking about transgender people?
I was wondering about topics. I sent that.
But my topic is toxic diversity, because the only reason we're even talking about this as if it is a rational thing we should be talking about in vis-a-vis the military is because we are inundated in an environment of what I call toxic diversity, you know? And that's diversity that scolds, rejects evidence, segregates, cancels, encourages identity grifting, and rejects criticism. Whereas the diversity that we're used to invites, is evidence-based, accepts criticism, encourages skill development. I mean, we've got that to me is an overarching theme that sort of touches on a lot of the things that are going on in our society right now that seem to be in the news, to include the from Trump derangement syndrome to the opioid crisis, you know, to the Connecticut girls track championship travesty. I mean, all that nonsense.
All and those girls diversity. Who got scholarships for being on a crew team who never even sat in a rowboat before.
White privilege.
Yeah. Well, I think that proves against white privilege, really. Because if there's white privilege, they wouldn't have to do any bribes. They just, by nature of their overweening whiteness, and, you know, they do the secret white handshake, which I haven't learned about yet, even though I think I qualify as white, even though I am half Italian.
Don't try to spin white privilege on me, white boy. Okay. I know. Hey, look. I know how Whitey works. Okay.
And you
this
should.
Is, this is white privilege. And don't tell me that no, Mac. It's green privilege because this shit was available to anybody who paid the money. Okay. I don't want to hear that.
That's you got to have money.
And I tell you what pisses me off is both Kaylee and Logan were on the USA championship crew teams in high school. As a matter of fact, Logan went over and rode in the Henley Regatta, his team did. They were undefeated.
Who are we talking about?
My son Logan and daughter Kaylee in high school. They both were on the USA champion crew team, and neither one of them got any damn scholarships. And I mean, they both had excellent grades, and I was kind of hoping they would.
If you would have paid
damn scholarships for them, and now I know where those boat spaces went to use a quote.
First of all, do they scholarship crew athletes? I'm not sure they do.
They do because their insanity for fairness, even sports that no one cares about. That's exactly why they went to the crew team thing, because people aren't paying attention to crew team draftees like they are football or basketball team draftees. So consequently, they're able to sneak in. And in the mania for fairness and equality, in the equality of outcome that resides in the universities, they just automatically said, yeah, we got to get good folks for these useless sports, too, that don't bring any money to college.
Well, they really didn't say that. What happened was you had people inside athletic departments who signed off on that shit in return for millions of dollars.
Mac, they're pretty judicious about who they went after. Like, they didn't go after the actual people in authority. They went after people who could influence it, i.e. coaches and stuff like that. They didn't the guy with
Wait. Are you talking about the indictment or the guy who organized the whole thing?
The guy who organized the thing, who he went after.
Right.
Coach here, an athletic director there. You know, influential professor there, you know, maybe a administrator here. He was very, he knew what he was doing as far as that goes, which leads me to think that there's probably a lot more to it as they start digging.
So how would you're our resident mafia expert, okay, at the risk of.
And incidentally, another Gambino boss was killed yesterday.
Yeah, I want you to spin us up on that one.
I will.
After, because they've had a couple of casualties, one death and then one DOW. But which has died of wounds, in case you don't know. But let's do you believe that the mafia is involved in this enterprise? Because anytime that kind of money changes hands, organized crime is like, wow, that's our business. What are these amateurs doing?
Well, every 30 years or so, that particular crime organization known as the Gambino, they assassinate their – from within, they assassinate their leader. Like they did Albert Anastasia in 1957. They did Paul Castellano in 1985. And now this guy Cali here this year. And usually in the past what it's been is the guy was you know, because of conflicting alliances and stuff, they just felt it was better to get rid of him. Or the guy, like in the case of Castellano, he was about to probably assassinate Gotti's the leadership strata of his particular crew for dope dealing. Not dope dealing per se, but dope dealing that they had been caught, and his name came up on a couple of their wiretaps. But this guy, I think, this last guy, because there's no more in the last 20, 30 years, it's very it's now an option to go to the government and use the government as an aide, which is exactly why Hoover never wanted to have the FBI involved.
What do you mean, you know, use the government as an aide? What are you talking about?
They go and they become government witnesses. Even bosses do that. And so consequently, this guy may have been talking to the government. I really don't know.
Hold on. In order to stay out of, in order to stay out of jail. So they become a snitch?
A rat, yeah. Now, I don't know if that's the case of this guy, to tell you the truth.
Well, you said that's acceptable?
It's not acceptable, but it has been happening at an ever-increasing rate.
Whoa. Yeah, I tell you, the guys who don't talk are the Russians. They're the ones who won't roll.
They've
been rolling for years.
Why won't the Russians roll?
Because they're hard. I mean, whatever we can do to them here in our legal system, it kind of pales in comparison to what most of them have been through.
Yeah, with getting skinned at home in the Rodina. What about... I'll tell you something interesting. I have this to say about that. I was just talking about, you know, reading the article about China and their cyber war that they waged on American technology, in particular, literally DOD technology for three decades now, and our lack of a response. And now, you know, they built their navy, they built their modern weaponry, all with American technology, and with no consequences. And now we're saying, we're going to have to retaliate now.
Hey, can I add the bitter old man comment to that?
Sure.
Okay, so you just mentioned also earlier in the broadcast about the Sextet virus and how it melted down the Iranians' nuclear development infrastructure.
Yeah.
Right? That the Israelis did. It allegedly is a joint U.S.-Israeli operation, which I don't believe.
Allegedly.
But if you remember back then, both Biden and Obama crowed about that on national TV. They're taking credit for it, basically just outright just taking all the credit and crowing about their great success, which started the Iranians and the Chinese on a mole hunt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened was the CIA had developed this platform.
Hold on. Explain mole hunt.
Oh, mole hunt. Looking for spies. Somebody's obviously helping them out to get access to these things. They knew they had moles, and they wanted to find them. And what they found was the CIA had a web-based platform for the agents' assets to report in, that they had thrown together in 2001 with the intention of going back and patching it, but never had. And the Iranians and the Chinese cracked into that son of a bitch in about 35 minutes, right? And in China, from 2010 to 2012, the entire CIA agency was focused on the fact that every Iranian and Chinese asset that they had was not only being rolled up, family disappearing, associates disappearing. I mean, they sat there and waited to watch these guys and took out everybody connected with them. And when I said take out, I mean they disappeared. So as you talk about this and you think about the fact that in for 10 years, the Dianne Feinstein's chauffeur and assistant was a Chinese agent, you think about all this kind of stuff, that to me even gets me more pissed off because not only did nothing happen, but we facilitated that with a Keystone Cops clown show that has left us virtually blind in those areas. It's just inexcusable.
Yeah, we're really myopic about our own situation in the States, not paying attention to what's going on outside, or not putting the proper priorities to it.
Yeah, but you got to be far, you know, okay, both those things to the bad, but on To the good, right? Beto O'Rourke's going to run for president. Right?
Yeah, they call him Tex Kennedy down here.
Exactly. He's a self-professed capitalist, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I am a capitalist. Said, je suis capitalist.
He doesn't know what he is so strange and equivocal on these issues. I don't know why he's running. He's got nothing to offer us other than a lot of that same old stupid talk. Like, I'm here to fight for you.
Yeah, but you know, okay, Tim, that's great. How Obama won, by being vague.
Yeah,
no, I know. He absolutely did. But Tex Kennedy's a white dude.
Yeah.
Let's go back to toxic diversity. That shit's not gonna
come.
Nobody's gonna listen.
Beto's not white. Beto's Hispanic.
Oh, No. When they had the Senate race, a bunch of Beto volunteers came by here, and they said, "Hey, are you going to vote for Beto?" I said, "No, I'm voting for a Hispanic guy. I'm not down with this vote for the white guy, rich white guy stuff." They're like, "No, Beto's a Hispanic." I said, "No, Ted Cruz is he was his parents from Puerto Rico. He's full Hispanic. Beto's a white dude, for Christ's sake."
Ted Cruz is even more Hispanic, Tim. He's a Cuban.
But I mean, these two were two teenagers. They were like, I said, Google your phones, break out your phones,
think,
Google this here.
I don't think Cubans are Hispanic.
You don't? Well, you're wrong.
No, that's only because they vote Republican. Let's go back to toxic diversity.
Cubans are their own unique group.
Really? That's all I'm saying. There it is right there. They're not Hispanic because they vote Republican. Oh, well, that explains everything.
Well, then we should make it that the Mexicans aren't Hispanic either, so that, you know, it'd be easier to handle them then. As, you know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Matter of fact, we should make it that that black people aren't black.
Black people aren't Hispanics?
I think we could handle that one.
I think we've already done that. Email.
Yeah, because you got like Juan Williams, who apparently is like, he's ethnically from his family from Panama or some place down south there. So he and plus he named himself Juan. I don't know if it's like a Beto type scam. I mean, he actually may be. He may actually habla, but you know, he's black.
One way
and he could be like he's like Ted Zimmerman now. He could be a Hispanic white guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, really.
You know, there is being Hispanic's complicated because Hispanic, right, is not a race. Right?
You're right.
It's so when you read census shit, right? You know, there's races, right? You're Asian, mm-hmm. you're black, right? Hispanic is white.
Mm-hmm.
European, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Huh? But then you get into ethnicities? So those are races, but then you get into ethnic groups. And being Hispanic, you can either identify white Hispanic or black Hispanic.
Well, I mean, if you look at Mexico, I think the white Hispanics dominate the government and the upper classes and the upper echelon of income.
In Mexico,
and the Indians are on the shits. So if you want to be rich and you're an Indian type Hispanic down here from Mexico, you got to be like Chapo.
There probably aren't that many Indian cooks because in Mexico, the strata of society is defined out to the nth degree. I think they've got 9 or 10 different classifications within that Hispanic hierarchy based on indigenous and African American bloodlines, because there's certainly plenty of both down in Mexico. But if you notice, Mexico's constitution forbids the change of the ethnic makeup of the country, and that was to basically preserve the spot for the Castilian Mexicans, the Spaniards, at the top of the hierarchy where they remain to this day.
Yeah, Vicente Fox. I mean, for Christ's sake, the guy looked like an extra in a John Wayne movie. You know, he's like, and he speaks English damn good.
And the thing is when people talk about racism here, it is part of our my new thing on this diversity stuff. They don't even recognize that in Mexico how stratified the society is, based exclusively on racial lines, and how that entards the progress. Not entirely, and it's getting better, I'm sure. But, I mean, it's when you go to other places in the world, the United States isn't racist, man. I mean, we're not even remotely close.
Yeah. You know, it's like the whole reparations thing. And history is like a mosaic of different situations. I saw a professor on a couple days ago, and he was, and I actually looked it up after he said, he's the black professor. He said, hey, look, these, the five civilized tribes, they owned slaves up until the Civil War. And that's probably a reason why they sided with the South, even though Andrew Jackson,
Hold on. The five civilized tribes? Who's it?
Yeah, Indian Cherokees.
Okay.
They had black slaves, lots of them. And they didn't give them up until the Emancipation Proclamation, until they lost the Civil War. Now, if you remember, the first time you get introduced to the five civilized tribes in any kind of coherent way in entertainment is the movie Outlaw Josie Wales, and that was Chief Dan George was played a Cherokee. And he said, yeah, we listened to the Secretary of the Interior, then we decided to declare war on the Union. But the truth is they were invested. They owned slaves. They had plantations. So if your reparations are going to give, I guess we're going to give in, we're going to make Indians pay some of that government money for the slaves they had, you know, and if you're half Indian, half black, do you pay yourself? And what do you pay yourself in? I mean, casino chips or what? It's interesting. And I guess I just fucked this thing up by going into the ridiculous, but none of that is not true, though. That's all true.
The let me just tell you where I take my I get my education relative to reparations from is from this.
Everybody think, you know, reparations is a good idea, dog. Reparations is stupid.
Now, I'm surprised to hear you say that. I figured you'd make a case for how slavery got you all oppressed and how the white man got his foot on your neck.
Giving out money wouldn't do nothing. Look at him.
That boy ain't doing nothing now but infomercials for bad credit.
Man, slavery, man, it ruined my whole life.
I don't know what y'all say, man, but I ain't.
This is from Barbershop, the movie. Barbershop 1, by the way.
I'm taking no reparations because as a black man, I got my pride and my dignity.
Good for him.
You know what? That's bull. You know why? Because you got bills. And your brothers ain't letting no money get by. Next, you're going to talk about how the Jews got money from the
Holocaust. Jews didn't get money, dog. Holocaust survivors
got
money.
We had welfare and affirmative action. Is that not respiration? Is that respiration?
No. Just mind you.
Reparations is stupid.
I'm surprised to hear.
Just mind you that this is made by, this movie is made by Ice Cube, right?
Right.
This is who makes this. And they take on everybody. They take on Martin Luther King. They talk about reparations. They take on everything. And, you know, you watch it and from the perspective of this is made by, you know, by a pretty cutting edge black guy and his deal is, I ain't afraid to go near the truth. So, but this,
yeah, we need more of them.
Well, do you think? Hold on here.
Well, I think every black person should at least get $100,000.
$100,000? What do you think that's gonna do? That ain't gonna do nothing but make Cadillac number one dealership in the country.
They busted up on reparations and whatnot. So. You know, those things come up, though, and to argue against them in public, right, is like, why would you ever go there to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, next subject. I ain't going there.
I'm
not going there.
I never pay a fucking cent. That's
well, you will if it, your federal, it comes out of your federal income tax.
No, I'll head for the hills. I'll be up there in Idaho, man. I'll be down there in McAllen. And when I get too, when things get too hot, me and Tim will just wade across the river into fucking Mexico.
And then wait till it all cools. Wait till it all cools back, and then come back.
Yeah,
but it's not like the old days. They've got better weapons over there, brother. That's the problem.
Yeah, you might want to stay here. It's safer here.
Well, I'll request asylum. Por favor, asylimo.
They don't. What you'll get is no habla.
Yeah.
Shit, I misjudged my defilade again.
Yeah, right, I misjudged my defilade. Yeah.
All right, so it's...
Hey, trying to go someplace and request asylum for Americans is a bad impossible. Try that crap in Australia, and they'll go like, yeah, mate, tourist visa ends in a week. Off you go. I mean, it's it doesn't work.
Here's an email. Tell Tim that the documentary The Thuds was awesome.
Yeah. Oh, wasn't it, though?
I have yet to see it. What's it about?
It's about Thud Ridge. Those anti-aircraft stuff, right, Timmy?
Yeah. Well, it's about the squadrons that were flying out of Thailand and basically prosecuting that war. So it's it's those F-105s, and it's fucking awesome. Again, they got interviews interspersed with some actual footage or whatnot, and of course the stories are just once again unbelievable. It's just an awesome thing to watch, you know. It gives you faith in the Air Force, or you know, at least you had faith in the Air Force. But they were straight up gunfighters, man.
Yeah,
interesting DACA.
So is that? I saw a documentary. I think it was a Medal of Honor about guys in Laos.
I saw it.
It's they get attacked. They're, I think it's a radio relay site or something like radio.
Radar something. Yeah.
Yeah, and they were and talks about them. What the NVA or somebody coming up this mountain to get them.
NVA, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they could DF. They had cutting edge DF equipment, but it wasn't so cutting edge. You could do it from South Vietnam,
right.
And they basically could zero in on formations moving down the Ho Chi Minh Trail,
which increased the lethality a little bit, which the North Vietnamese could not have. We can't have that. The all right, current events. What's going on in current events that you want to talk about? Have we covered everybody's? Did you explain adequately the mafia deaths to us?
Well, as much as I could.
Oh,
know that this guy Callie
as much as you could in an unclassified setting.
Yeah, he's first generation Sicilian American, so he's from what he contributed to the Gambino family is bringing over what the Italian Americans call Zips, which is Sicilians and people from southern Italy, criminals who come over and they don't have the experience of the corrupting influence of America, i.e. use of drugs and stuff, and they're more likely to kill people. You remember in The Sopranos, they call people from over on the other side to come over, do murders, and then go back to Italy. And this guy brought a lot of these, what they call Zips. And they call them Zips because they speak Italian real fast.
So he's dead now?
Yeah, he might have been. Now, the guy who did that in the Bonanno family, if you watched Donnie Brasco, Carmen Galante, he got killed by them. They conspired against him with other folks who were here in America, and they actually killed him. So that might have happened too, you know. But either way, I thought they were pretty much rolled up, but, you know, I saw this. I'm thinking, you know, something's moving there. Something's going on. That's usually a big deal.
Something's going on. All right. What about the guy who died of old age? What's his deal?
Who are you talking about now?
I thought the guy
died. Oh, you mean Carmine? Oh, you're talking about Carmine the Snake.
Yes.
He is the head of the Colombo family. And, he's one of the, talking about the death of Albert Anastasia in 1957, he's probably one of the guys who pulled the trigger along with the Gallo brothers to kill him in the barbershop there in Manhattan. And he was known as a real hard guy and everything, but he ran the Colombo family from prison, which manifested itself in them having a lot of unrest through the years because they didn't have any firm. They had people basically trying to you know, interpret what he meant by what he would say in these cryptic messages from being incarcerated. And so people use that, go figure, organized criminals using the ambiguity to their own ends. They littered a lot of bodies in the 80s and 90s.
What's amazing, though, is how, you know, who's the dude that was running the drug thing? From he just got thrown in jail a year or two ago, and he's running his business from jail on a clandestine cell phone. So I don't know too much about going to jail. Do either one of you?
Nope.
Well, Not personally.
Can you have free communications when you're in jail? Can you have a cell phone? Can you have a computer? Can you get on the internet? Can you be a human being?
Bribery. If you can bribe somebody, same way those two girls got to college on a cruise scholarship, if you can bribe the right person, you can get stuff. And that's what they do.
So you can't have it. Is it so? A laptop computer inside of a prison would be contraband?
I don't know.
I think it depends on the prison, and it depends on the amount of privileges a prisoner has earned. There's a lot that goes into that. But dude, in every prison where you've got guys there for year after year after year, even dumb guys are pretty clever at figuring things out. They get drugs. I mean, there's drugs all over, apparently rampant in prison. They get cigarettes even though they're not supposed to smoke.
Listen to this. You know? I came back from Afghanistan, and a friend of mine had been in prison for bank robbery. A kid I grew up with. And hold on, here's an email. Mac, Barbershop is seriously one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life. I know shit. Swear to God, pissed my pants watching that movie. The stuff they say about everything is stuff that I think that even black people weren't supposed to talk about. Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, reparations. Is there anything that those guys don't get after in that movie? Straight up hilarious. That guy's a genius. He made the Friday series, right? Part of NWA, and that guy is a genius. And everything he does, he builds it around the truth, which makes it even more interesting.
Yeah, but could he do it today? Because that came out about the same time as, like, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, right?
I don't know.
In the
90s. It was back in there, right? And if you watch Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, which I didn't. I just heard this on another podcast. Some guy watched it with his daughter. It's completely anti-tranny. I mean, the whole movie is nothing but
yeah, what's your name? What's your name? I saw that a couple times.
Yeah, it's nothing but tranny bashing, the entire movie. It's funnier than hell now, but... Even still today, but you couldn't make it today. There's not a chance in hell he could release that movie today. There is not a chance of hell. I bet you even Barbershop would start catching crap because they're being a little bit too candid about the sacred cows.
He doesn't seem to care too much about the sacred cows.
I'm the toxic diversity guy.
He's got his own money, the thing is, where do you get your money? Where do you get your money from, and who will produce it? And if you got your own money. Like he does, he's a pretty big dude, man. I'm kind of a fan of that guy. I mean, he tells the truth. And you know what? What was really interesting was I went down this kind of road. I took Colleen to the Grammy Museum here in Los Angeles one weekend. So we were in LA and we go to the Grammy Museum. And so we're going through the museum and seeing everything there. And then there's this display and it has a whole bunch of Tupac stuff. And I don't know shit about Tupac, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he kind of catches my attention because I see these notebooks and there's songs that he's written and all this other stuff in there. So, I went home and I started reading about how he was killed. And the guys that kill him are the two major suspects in his death are both LAPD officers. And it chronicles this whole Rampart investigation, right? I think it's the largest investigation for corruption of a police force in American history. And it details what these guys in that movie that he made, NWA, right? That whole Straight Outta Compton. It details that, you know, the LAPD had considered itself its own gang, especially there was a gang inside of the Rampart Division. And I want to say they had a Viking or something like that for a tattoo they would put on. And there was a certain call that is an officer shooting, like it's a 508. and then it's a 508 with a fatality. There's another one, and you would get that tattoo when you did those things, and it was amazing to read what the hell went on. And these guys, these record companies hired cops, they hired assistant district attorney, they paid them tons of cash, right? And it was just corrupt on corrupt on corrupt on corrupt.
Wow, I didn't know it was L.A. cops. I thought it was like, you know, rappers from New York.
No.
I never knew that.
No.
Wow.
No, because it comes out of Death Row Records, and Death Row Records, who did they hire to do security for all their stuff? Off-duty LAPD guys. So they knew how to play the game, right? They knew how to play the game because they grew, right? So.
Well, yeah, in L.A., they're the only guys that could probably carry them and the guys that work for, the guy that wrote The Gift of Fear, the Becker. Those are the only two people that can carry in L.A.
What?
I mean, carry legally, yeah.
Unless you're working for Gavin DeBecker,
you didn't say,
you're not carrying in L.A.
You didn't say, who's Gavin DeBecker?
Oh, dude, the best book ever written that every woman should read, and most guys, is A Gift of Fear. And he works with David Grossman on this Mosaic Threat Assessment Project. He's the high-end guy. He only does, like, Madonna and your top-tier stars. All of them have Gavin DeBecker protection details. The guy's a remarkable individual. His mother apparently was a street prostitute. He grew up an orphan. He's completely anti-guns. He does not believe civilians should have guns. He believes his agents should have guns, but nobody else. He's kind of controversial. But you should read The Gift of Fear, which is one of the most profound books I've ever read. I've made my daughters read it. I made it make everybody I meet read the damn thing because it's just a
The Gift of Fear. I'm going to read it.
Oh, absolutely. It's just talking about how you use your intuition and how often you ignore your intuition when it should be danger. You know, it's the rule of opposites. There's a lot of things that he used that I incorporated, particularly when I was overseas. Absolutely. But The Gift of Fear and Gavin DeBecker, they're fascinating guys. Although, you know, I'm not down with Gavin's Second Amendment thing, and I don't know him. But I do know Grossman. Well, hell, you guys know Grossman. We all met him up at West Point. Yeah.
Were you with us when we went to West Point?
Yeah.
I don't know. Were you with us, Jeff?
I was up there with it was a bunch of us. We took me and we took Gunny Donvito up there. And
no, that was yours. That was yours.
Oh, no, that's a second. No. Hey, Jeff, that was a different. That was a different one. When I met Grossman, it was with Mac and Major Allen. We went up to do Mac to give his decision making course. That was the whole purpose of his
right. Well, this was after that, and the guy who arranged it was Major Welsh, who was a hardcore dude who had been Killer's company commander in 1/8. Both as a rifle company
commander. I know who you're talking about. Yeah, I know you. I know him.
Yeah, and Welsh, he's a good dude. And
well, he's a West Point grad, right? But he came in the Marine Corps.
I don't know. He might be. He might be. That might be how he got that job. Right, that guy Grossman. His kids look like children of the corn. I mean, I mean, I don't want to insult his kids. I'm just saying.
You just did. What do you mean? I don't want to.
You know what I mean? They're kind of haunted looking. The whole thing.
In 2001, his whole family came to the front site and we put him through a 40 handgun pistol package in exchange for him doing his class that he does, his mobile training team class for the instructors. And his kids had filled out nicely by then. They were pretty proficient with the pistols too.
Yeah, I bet. Just so you know. Sure. And it was just, I don't know. I talked to Gunny Donvito about it on the way back. I really got to know Gunny Donvito besides getting punched by him later on. But I said, hey, Gunny, why don't you come to Matt, whatever that bar is you go to in West Point? And I said, hey, let's go there and, you know, and have a few. He goes, sir, I don't drink and I don't go to bars. I go, how come? He says, well, you know, you go to bars, sometimes people get a little drunk and then they, you know, they forget that they can't fight and then they, you know, bad stuff happens. And if I get into a fight with somebody, I'll kill them. I'll end up in a penitentiary. I said, well, he said, I go, well, do you have to kill him if you get into a fight with him? He goes, hey, sir, if somebody buys a ticket for me, they're going to get the whole show.
That sounds like an amateur, though. It sounds like somebody who's not, like, you know, confident and like, I only have, you know, I only have one weapon I can launch. It's the nuke. I don't have a whole array.
No, that was Don Vito's shit.
The guy knows that anybody can get it in the right time, right circumstances, and the right sense of, you know, series of distractions and having a bad day. Any guy can get any other guy. That's why you should have the gift of fear, as Aaron DeBeck or whatever that guy says. Because you should always be on the lookout for when you're at your weakest, somebody else might be at their strongest, and then normally it wouldn't be an issue, but it is on this day. And that's how Don Vito looked at stuff.
And real quick to explain to everybody, when we're talking about David Grossman, he wrote a book
on killing,
and a lot of his concepts, we had taken the manuscript and incorporated them into a close combat system of training that was run by Gunny Don Vito, who had come up from Paris Island specifically to do just that, to incorporate Grossman's work. So Grossman went on to become...
Yeah, the premise of it was that there's very few people in a unit that actually do the shooting and the killing. And what you were trying to do was to broaden the number of people that would participate in the killing, by teaching, you know, aggressiveness and aggression and promoting it in certain ways. And that was the premise of what he did. And, you know, we met him, Tim, you and I met him. I mean, he hadn't published his book yet. You know, he was working on it, and he came down to Quantico and gave his spiel, and that was the first time I had heard it, and it's been interesting to watch him, you know, be as prominent. He actually came up, and you know, I think he has a number of products that he sells in terms of speeches that he does. He came up where I lived in North Dakota, to Grand Forks, North Dakota, and spoke to the school district and parents one night at a community event about how we're teaching our children to kill, and in particular the use of video games, how we desensitize them, and all the things. Because when I want to say it was after Columbine that his name nationally became very prominent in terms of that discussion about teaching kids to kill and all the rest of that.
In 2001, he was the most popular and busiest police trainer. He was working from Helsinki all the way down to New Zealand. I mean, he was on the road constantly. Matter of fact, when he talked to me, he says, you know, I've got to stop this. I can't keep traveling like I am. But he was a one-man show.
Very
popular.
What was he teaching police departments?
The whole killology thing, the whole mindset that's required, the thinking it through, you know, a lot of the data that he had. I'm not so sure that the violence in the video games thing has panned out in time, but when he was talking about things back then, which made sense, which was the older guys who had mentally prepared themselves ahead of time, thinking, you know, when they got involved in the shooting, instead of that being a shock to them, it was, well, I knew this was going to happen at some point, and I knew this was going to happen. Now here I am. And they've already thought through what they're going to do and how they're going to react to it. So,
yeah, that whole philosophy was embraced by the IOC. That's the first thing that impressed me when I got there in 92, is that I remember Tim telling me along these lines, having a similar conversation, talking about fighter pilots. The guy who would there's a group of people, and there's some men who they're going to. They're predisposed towards stepping over the line between, you know, not being in deadly conflict to being knee deep in it, you know, and that's something that's almost like impossible to define what makes somebody do that, you know.
And Grossman's thing was, I think it was something like 2% of the pilots accounted for 40% of the kills.
Right, that was what it was.
And so what he was trying to do was you can't, I mean, you're born with these things. He was trying to get you to mentally prepare yourself so that when you get to condition black, boom, it's on. Now we're in a lethal force encounter that you're automatically responding. And his big thing was, and this is what we tried to do in the Room of Pain to reinforce, was the breathing technique that connected the autonomous to the unconscious nervous system. And keeping your pulse down below 150.
Right.
That was the whole thing about the goddamn Room of Pain, was to try to get them used to being hit and to think and to keep their pulse down and to breathe.
And that, you know, that's the thing about, like, inexperienced fighters. I'm watching this. I take this documentary about the Golden Gloves competition, and inexperienced fighters will exhaust themselves because the adrenaline that you feel when you first step into the ring, it leaves you exhausted after it wears off. And the Room of Pain was great because you had that feeling of adrenaline when you first get in there. It's just nothing but adversity, whether you're on one of the exercise stations or you're in the ring. But after a while, that gets pounded out of you, kind of like when you're playing football. You know, you're nervous. You're in a state of anxiety until the kickoff and the first hit happens. And so that really kind of expanded on that thing. And that's a very real thing. And, you know, being able to relax, but at the same time, you know, keep that aggression, there's no way you could go multiple rounds, you know, the constant infusion of adrenaline that, you know, the fight or flight syndrome that basically, you know, you have in your biological makeup. You got to control that. And that's a lot of what we're talking about.
You know, it's interesting, you know, because the post-traumatic winning thing, really what you're talking about is being a mentor for somebody who's going to go down a road that they've never been down. And whether you're, you know, we do it when we trained at the infantry officer course, you know, you tell them one thing, and it's always something else. You tell them they're going to get, you know, three helicopters and two trucks, and it's one helicopter and three trucks, right? Yeah. And so it's this constant, by doing this to them all the time and taking them down that road, you force them to exercise those muscles. And the same thing I would tell you with, you know, I was talking to somebody who helps people after they've had heart attacks, because she had a heart attack. And, you know, there's nothing but unknown and fear. And all of a sudden you get a mentor that says, no, you can do this. You can live a long life. You're going to have to change the way you live. But you're fully capable of doing that. And, you know, post-traumatic winning does the same thing with trauma. Hey, you know, you had this happen in your life, right? That's not easy to live with. And yeah, and so, you know, you see it in all the – it really helps a ton to have mentors in your life. They can show you that, you know what, yeah, this, I know it feels like it's upside down right now, but take a deep breath, right? Let it settle. Don't react to the first thing, right? And now look. Are you starting to see it? And it's like, oh, okay. And there's so many different facets of life that applies to, that I would say that, you know, if there's one grand lesson in life, it is find smart people and copy what they do until you figure it out. In anything you do. Right? Like in kindergarten. I call it kindergarten smart, right? You learn this in kindergarten. Who's the kid who flunked kindergarten? Oh, it's that Kenny kid. All right? I'm following him around all day, right? He knows where the balls are. He knows where the graham crackers are. He knows where all the musical instruments are, right? So we have to hand those out because I want the triangle. And I don't want to be one of those block guys that are... For those of you who don't know, we used to do music like
my
that.
My parents bribed the kindergarten teachers, so I got through it.
Right. There were kids that had blocks, and they, you know, and you'd sit there like a little dope, right? And they'd point to you, and you'd start, you'd smash the blocks together. But the triangle was a metal triangle. Ding, ding, ding. That was the smartest kid in the class. And even though I wasn't the smartest kid in the class, I wanted the triangle nonetheless. But the kid who flunked, how smart do you have to be after the third day to figure out, like, I need to follow Kenny around because that guy, he flunked. He knows where – he's a genius, man. Kid's a kindergarten genius. He knows where both sets of bathrooms are. He knows – right? He knows –
my bathroom and my pants.
Right? He knows where the bike racks are. He knows what the kid's – right? He's Einstein. He's kindergarten Einstein. And then 2 weeks later, it's like, no wonder that dude flunked, man. So, yeah, I call it kindergarten smart to copy smart people before you screwed up. But again, in different phases of life, it's pretty important. Pretty important. Get up on the right foot.
Yeah, you're right.
Hey, man, the reason Grossman came down to Quantico is we took his manuscript and swiped it in its entirety. It was the basis of the close combat course. You know, we told him, hey, thanks. This is what we were looking for. It was he's an interesting good dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. He was one of the our guest weirdos for sure. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way, because we had him, we had Dr. D Giovanni, we had Bill Lynn with his weird fucking costumes, Lederhosen with a hat with a feather in it and stuff like that. We had a little crew there, man. You know.
It was a weird. It was weird. Dr. DiGiovanni, who was down there helping the FBI out on the David Koresh thing, and so
I think Mel named his first kid Dr. DiGiovanni. No, he didn't.
All right. Final thought. Final thoughts, Tim. Final thought.
Nothing. I was going to launch into a long Dr. DiGiovanni story, but we can save that for another day. I got my eye on Venezuela, though, and
we can debate who would win in a fight between Grossman and Dr. DiGiovanni. That's for next
week. DiGiovanni, in order to get permission to do to the lieutenants what he was doing, spent an entire weekend standing in a 55-gallon drum half full of water naked.
Trying to keep a straight face. Major Allen,
and took notes and submitted this in order to get they had to go right up to General Krulak to do this kind of stuff. Because remember, we would set those guys up, and we'd grab one and put them in a tub, and that was part of Dr. G's thing about everybody breaks.
Well, you couldn't go to the general and say, sir, we want permission to torture lieutenants, because that's what we were doing. I mean,
no, he explained. He laid it out pretty well, but that takes a certain level of genius. I mean, that was those nights
those glasses, man, you could see the rings of Saturn if a normal person looked at those glasses. But he was a great guy. They're all great people, you know.
Yeah, and a few times the lieutenants detected him walking out when they're in the D in the middle of the night, and he look out and he see Dr. D in a chemical hood.
You're right.
Oh, they knew it. They knew what the shit was on. That was hysterical.
Something wicked this way comes.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, boys. Look, you two have a nice week. I will talk to you next week from the crossroads of the Marine Corps, Quantico.
Sure.
Have a good trip.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, have a good trip.
All right.
Hey, take care.
All right, there you have it. That is Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny here on a Wednesday. Mike Musselman will join us next on as we continue on a Thursday. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.